by the miracle of recording.
So you started your professional life as a planner, is that right?
That's right. I was a planner I was in an agency for 6 years, and mm-hmm. then I was freelance for 3 years.
Okay. And what do you do now?
Now I direct sexually explicit erotic films for women.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm the owner and director of Blue Artichoke Films, that's the name of the company.
Okay. And is there anything that you've learned from one that you've applied in the other?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like what?
Well, because I was a planner, I think I have an interest in, when people watch my films, what are they going to feel when they look at it?
Mm-hmm.
I'm very emotion-oriented, and I don't think that's true for most directors. They have something they want to say, but they don't always, it's not always their first priority what people are going to feel. Whereas, from my perspective, I'm making films to turn people on. If it doesn't turn them on, I'm actually not doing my job.
Mm-hmm.
So. I want to care a lot about that, and I do care a lot about that.
And was that true when you were being a planner as well? Was that the kind of planner you were?
Did I care a lot about emotion
as
a kind of planner?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so you weren't about, this is what we need to say?
No, I mean, communication is part of emotion. You're trying to
right.
create an emotional response in people. And, you know, sometimes you're trying to create certain thoughts in people too, but to me, thoughts and emotions are part of the same process. They're completely related, and that's the way I think about film as well, not just sex film, but all film, is that
mm-hmm.
your thoughts about it and your emotions about it are all tied up together, so
mm-hmm.
you can't have one without the other.
Mm-hmm. So if suddenly you were forced to go back to being a planner, what would you take with you, do you think, from what you've, from the world you're in now? I see, tricky question.
Yeah, I know what I took from planning to filmmaking. I think now I'm a creative. I mean, now I'm a planner for my own business, but I'm also the creative because I'm the director, and that's
uh-huh.
a really different experience.
Uh-huh.
And I wish that I had had it earlier. It would have
right.
made me a better planner, because sometimes it's your job to have an aesthetic reaction that's sometimes hard to articulate to people. And you do have to articulate it to people, or it's not going to get done the way
mm-hmm.
you want.
Mm-hmm.
So then the buck stops with you. You know, you're
mm-hmm.
the one who has to decide. So I've been put into that role, and if I'd done that earlier, I think maybe I would have been a better and a more sympathetic planner.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a great experience for everybody to try doing something creative with a big team of people. I mean, on the last film I worked on, there were 15 people, all of whom were completely dependent on me to tell them, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, they know how to do their jobs, but they need to know what direction I'm going and why, and very detailed specifics of what I want to do.
So how does that feel?
It's a lot of pressure. I mean, in general, I know where I'm going and I know what I want to do, but there are a lot of details, and I also believe in, you know, hiring people who do their jobs well and have a creative perspective of their own. So sometimes I just kind of like to leave it to them, but it doesn't always work that way.
So after years of advising people, or some years of advising people on their brands, you now have your own brand.
Yes.
So how is that?
It's funny. I think I'd be... I'm a much stronger planner on other people's business because I'm not attached to it, so I have a distance. Whereas
mm-hmm.
on my own business, I care so much about it. Not, you know, not because I'm, you know, trying to make money, but because I love what I do and it's so important to me that I find it hard to be objective. But one of the things that I'm working on now is doing more marketing
mm-hmm.
and making my brand more visible to people. And a lot of things that I took for granted about my brand, I actually am revisiting.
Right.
Based on conversations that I've had with people that have bought the movies and with people who are potential partners of mine, I've thought some things that I thought were crystal clear are not actually as clear as I thought.
Right.
And one thing I always thought would be hard and is hard is, I mean, I'm basically working in a very new category. It's a really vital category. I think it's going to be a huge category, but erotic films for women right now is incredibly limited.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're making the market at the same time as building.
Yeah, I have to create that interest. I have to create that space in people's minds for, oh, right. You know, men watch porn. Hey, maybe women are interested in being turned on through film too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
whether you call that porn or you call that erotic film or you call that sexually explicit film, it's still a new idea for some people, and I take it for granted because for me, that's
mm-hmm.
what I'm interested in watching. I know
mm-hmm.
lots of women who are, but that's a new idea for a lot of people. It's a space we have to create.
And the language, presumably, is really important, isn't it? Because it just sets up all these different expectations.
It really does. Have you played with the language?
I mean, have you resolved the language you'd like to use?
No, I mean, I made a decision on the last film when we were soliciting cast and crew that I was going to call it an erotic film. I was not going to call it a porn film because even though I feel very comfortable with what to me is the main thing that the word porn connotes, namely unsimulated sexual penetration, which I'm going to be showing, and for some other people, the main connotation of porn is that it's there to turn you on. It's the genre of film designed to turn you on. I feel great about that, and that's what I'm doing as well, but it also has so many negative connotations, and it's really hard to control that in the media sphere. Like, you can try to use the word erotic, and that does help, but because most of the rhetoric around this industry in general involves the word porn, and there are so many negative connotations, it's hard to put across to people what the Blue Artichoke films are really going to be like.
Right.
I mean, I'm making films that I say are, you know, interesting, unique films designed to show sexuality in a more emotionally realistic way than you see in porn films or than you see in mainstream films. But a lot of people get hung up on the words, which is natural. That's the way people are. So language becomes everything.
Right. So what's the difference, do you think, between the way men and women watch these kind of films?
I think that women are pickier than men are. I think women like sexually explicit stuff, but right now most of what's sexually explicit has no context. So there's no story, but there's not even a sense of who are these people and why are they having sex. The styling is beyond horrible. I mean, stuck in the 80s would be generous, but you know, terrible hair and terrible lighting, and you're looking at pimply butts, and it's just, you know, too much. You know, the people don't look that interested. They don't look like they want to be there, and they can't act because that's not what the adult industry is about. So you don't have that traditional sense of understanding what the characters really want because that's not what the film is about. And then finally, they're just not that. In some cases, ethical. Like, people are being underpaid, and you don't feel good about the circumstances under which they were made, and you know that people weren't getting a chance to kind of explore their sexuality while it was being filmed. And I feel like that's, you know, it's a bit of a waste. Those things are all fixable. And I, you know, I'm just making films like I want to see, selfishly.
Right.
So.
Cool. So, is it blueartichoke.com?
It's blueartichokefilms.com.
Okay. And what's there?
You can buy the latest film. I just finished Headshot. Headshot is a remake of an Andy Warhol movie from 1963 called Blowjob. And Blowjob is just, for 24 minutes, a guy's face as he, you think, gets a blowjob, but you can't really be sure. So I basically thought, well, by most accounts, including my own account, that's not a very sexy film, but I love the idea behind it, the idea that what's most sexual about an experience can be conveyed through the face of the person who's having this experience. So I wanted to see how much intimacy could you get by portraying the same event, but filming it in a different style. So, you know, instead of a silent black and white film, it's a film with sound. You actually get a sense of the relationship between the main character and the woman that is going to do this with him. And I varied the shots because I really wanted to create the sense of intimacy between you and him. So it's shot very differently than the Warhol. But Warhol was doing something different. He wasn't trying to make it sexy, and I just thought, well, let's see how sexy you can make it, you know?
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can get that, and you can sign up for a copy of Matinee when it's finished. That's the second film. And you can just learn more about, if you want to be part of Blue Artichoke Films, you can. We're always looking for crew and helpers and marketing, so if you want to help me with my business, I'd be really grateful.
Cool. Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
By the miracle of recording.